every day new models, new architecture, so you need to be up to date to can understand what is the new topics, to adapt your research interest giving the news.
Thank you so much for your time, Doctor.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for sharing this time with us. Until next time, it's goodbye from me, Bahman Ray.
Seven skies, see a pure heart never lies. The words you learn will never earn. It's time to think and wonder why. Stars above will always be a shining guide for us to see. And when I doubt, I'll have no doubt, but still I wonder why. Digging through our pages past, wondering how the truth will last. God's in control is what I found. I think I'll try this time around. And no one really feels the path I seek. And no one's gonna care as much as me. Yeah.
today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, dear brother and sister, Salamun alaikum and welcome to a new episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. Thank you for choosing this program to listen to. And inshallah, this program would be beneficial for you. Today, we're going to speak about modern idolatry.
Yourself, can't you see this wonder spread in front of you? The clouds floating by, the sky so clear and blue, planets in their orbits, the moon and the sun, such perfect harmony. Let's start questioning ourselves, isn't this proof enough for us?
Today is Wednesday, 5th of Jamadil Thani, 1447 of the Islamic Lunar Retreat Calendar, corresponding to the 5th of Azar, 1404 of the Islamic Solar Retreat Calendar, and the 27th of November, 2025 of the Christian Gregorian Calendar. And now let's listen to one verse from the Holy Quran and learn more about it. We bless this moment by listening to chapter Al-Imran, verse 160.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. In yansurkumullahu fala ghaliba lakum. Wa in yakhdhulkum faman dhalladhi yansurkum min ba'dih. وعلى الله فليتوكل المؤمنون.
If Allah should aid you, no one can overcome you. But if He should forsake you, who is there that can aid you after Him? And upon Allah let the believers rely.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
In the previous verse, trust and reliance in Allah was recommended. In this verse, the reason of that reliance is expressed, saying that both honor and abasement are with Allah. It is narrated that the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, asked Gabriel, "What is trust in Allah?" The angel answered, "It is so that you know people do not give you profit nor loss, neither they grant nor restrain, and that you be despair of all humankind. Then when a servant becomes like this, he will not act for anyone except Allah. He will not be hopeful of or afraid of anyone but Allah. He will not become desirous in anyone save Allah. And this is the reality of trust."
My life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I, when I have you, to doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness, everything which makes no sense, know that you exist. You are the light that guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life.
we want to speak about is modern idolatry. Have you ever met someone who says Bismillah every morning? But when they see a talisman, lucky number, or good selling item, their eyes light up. We sometimes smile faintly, but in our heart we might ask, are you serious? Your sustenance comes from Allah, but your heart is pining for inanimate objects. This is the face of modern shirk, not in dark caves, not in an accident ritual far removed from everyday life, but in the brightly lit shops, in bustling the storefronts, in the supposedly practical and modern digital world. People say they believe in Allah, but in practice they rely on mantras, amulets, or other items to boost their sales. Their tongues speak of Tawheed, but their hearts still doubt Allah Himself.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is Ali Host. Today we are going to talk about modern idolatry in 2025. Feng Shui shops also feature items such as Chinese coins, foo dogs, wind chimes, dragon turtles, qilin, dragon horse, towers of knowledge, wishing oxen, magic mirrors, gourds, mystic knots, laughing Buddhas, elephants, Arona fish, merchant ship, and wealth vases. Feng Shui lacks scientific basis, dear brothers and sisters. Do these statues truly achieve what is claimed? According to Islamic scholars, Feng Shui is not a science, but is an interpretive system describing cosmic phenomena and relationships. It offers a worldview concerning material life and humanity's role in it. It is an ancient Chinese belief system, not a religion. If its practical recommendations are to be validated, they must first prove effective through scientific and empirical tests. Yet Feng Shui has never been scientifically verified. If authentic Islamic teachings are not properly introduced, false ideas will take their place.
Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio.
May this moment last forever in your hearts, a day you'll always remember every part.
Today's special.
This feeling of love, just let it grow forever through your life. Bring beautiful years of joy between you till the end of time.
Believing in superstitions is one of the hidden ways of committing shirk or hypocrisy, or disbelief. Superstitions are false beliefs that certain things bring good or bad luck. Some common examples include a black cat crossing the road means bad luck, or breaking a mirror causes 7 years of bad luck, or Friday the 13th is an unlucky day, or hanging a horseshoe brings good luck. These beliefs have no basis in Islam. The Prophet said there is no bad omen in Islam. Only Allah controls what happens to us, not objects, numbers, or superstitions. Instead of fearing bad luck, we should trust in Allah and seek His protection through du'as and reliance.
Oh,
Now, how to protect ourselves from shirk or disbelief. Avoid words and expressions that lead to shirk. Sometimes shirk begins in language. Be careful with common phrases like, if it weren't for you, this wouldn't have happened. By your life, this object protects me. This is for good luck. Or replace them with correct phrases such as, if it weren't for Allah, then you. By Allah, Allah protected me through this. Changing the way we speak helps purify our beliefs and keeps our hearts aware that everything happens by Allah's will.
So the whole point of sujood is to make us humble, the Imam says. And the whole point of salah is to make us humble. There's a hadith that's narrated both from Imam Ali and from Fatima alayhi salam. When they speak about the benefits of salah, they say, وَالصَّلَاةَ تَنْزِيهًا لَكُمْ عَنِ الْكِبْرِ. One of the benefits of salah is that it makes us humble. And it makes us humble through sujood. But the question is how? How does sujood make me humble? Two ways. Number one, the first way that sujood makes me humble is if I ask you, what's the most honorable part of your body? For most, it may differ from culture to culture, but for most cultures, and especially for most of the Middle Eastern cultures, the most honorable part of the body is the forehead. Correct? That's why when you love someone like your parents, you go and kiss them on their forehead. You want to respect someone, you kiss them on the forehead. Because this is the most honorable part of the body. And what's the most worthless thing in the world? Dust, dirt. It's all over the place, correct? Allah Azza wa Jal is asking us every day, five times we pray. Each rak'ah has two sujoods, correct? So there's 17 rak'ahs, times that by two. 34 times a day, Allah is asking me to place my most honorable part of body on the dust. Which is the most worthless thing in the world. Do you think that's easy for an arrogant person? An arrogant person who his forehead has to be way up high. Now we're telling him, take this forehead, not only put it on the ground, but rub it on the dust. So that when you remove your head, it becomes dusty. This is not easy for an arrogant person. So when we do this every day, this will gradually make us humble human beings. That we learn to put our heads down on the earth, on the dust, not just on the earth.
Dear brother and sister, we open a new chapter here. And that was about modern idolatry, one of the great and important phenomena in modern life. I think it's better to continue this interesting topic on the next episodes of today's special from IRIB English Radio. So be with us, and till then, we leave you in Allah's mercy. Fi amanillah.
La ilaha illallah, Allahu Rabbi. محمد نبي علي إمامي لفتى إلا علي علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي لا إله إلا الله الله ربي محمد نبي علي إمامي لفتى إلا علي علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي
The Puzzle of Life The Sound of Living Only sound will endure. RIB English Radio.
Hello and welcome back to Attrition. I'm your host, Amar Kazmi, and I continue to be joined by independent British journalist Sarah Wilkinson. Sarah is a long-standing campaigner for Palestinian liberation. Sarah, in part one of the programme, we spoke about the repression that you faced from the British state for your journalism on Palestine, and we were talking about the way in which the police operate here in Britain. We know that they're an arm of the state, but they're supposed to be operationally independent. But it seems that now they're not even operationally independent, right? There's just this pipeline of demands coming from the regime in Tel Aviv to the British government and then passed on to the police. And then this goes to a question that seems to rile up a lot of people, but which I think is very important, which is, who exactly is driving this push to silence pro-Palestine voices in Britain? I have my own view on that. Some people say that it just comes directly and organically from the British state, which supports Israel because it's simply a Western colonial outpost. But I think that oversimplifies the question, because we saw, particularly under Jeremy Corbyn when he was leader of the Labour Party, how the Israel lobby in Britain intensified and battle-tested new censorship methods to go after pro-Palestine voices in Britain. And that came from the Zionist entity. It didn't come from Britain. We saw how the former Israel ambassador to Britain, Mark Regev, worked to push these strategies. That's when we had the widespread rollout of an official definition of anti-Semitism with the IHRA working definition. We had the revival of a group like the Jewish Labour Movement to help take down Jeremy Corbyn. We saw the case of Shai Massot, the Zionist spy, working to take down even a conservative minister, Sir Alan Duncan. And it seems to me that the British state has been, over the past decade especially, increasingly captured and radicalized by the Zionist regime. I mean, would you agree with that assessment, which is basically that the scale of the push against pro-Palestine journalists, activists and protesters here in Britain is primarily being pushed by external forces? And what's your take on that?
I was waiting for you to say occupied. Are we occupied? And yes, we are. Everything's coming straight out of the Tel Aviv playbook. Even the questions in interrogations, they're no longer following British protocol. You know, some of my interrogation questions were just outright racist. I think one of them, you know, why do you think Palestinian people are better than white people? I mean, I just find that an astonishing question. And it's clearly not a British question. So are we occupied? Yes, indeed. I think that we are very much so. So although, yes, it seems to be coming from the British government, you know, it's not just that we're allies, because as I've said before, who would have an ally that murders and maims? Well, yeah, the numbers are 70,000, but you know, we know that even if you look at the Lancet, you know, they were guessing the figures were over 200,000 Palestinians killed. I know that there's 15 or 16,000 Palestinian children missing, so on top of nearly 30,000 killed, there's hundreds of thousands of adults and children missing. So who'd have an ally that is murdering at this extent? Who would actually brag about having the same values as an entity that is basically using mass murder to ethnically cleanse an entire population? Who'd do that? And I can't believe that the British public aren't more shocked that when you hear Ursula von der Leyen and talking about, well, we have, you know, similar values. It's, well, no, we don't. I don't know anyone who has the same value as a regime that is prepared to annihilate an entire population. And that annihilation is still going on. Let's not forget this yellow line that they've created. They're now, this morning, they've announced that they're moving the yellow line outwards to take more of Gaza's territory. And that yellow line obviously has about another 250 meters in front of it, where suddenly these yellow blocks appear. And let's not forget, it isn't a spray-painted yellow line. It's an invisible yellow line, and it's an excuse to continue the genocide, to continue killing innocent Palestinians, young children playing football, just who accidentally cross over this invisible line. The genocide, the ceasefire, they're one and the same. The ceasefire is just, I think I've used this phrase before, but it's a rebranded version of genocide. And I've also used the phrase of you know, this is a Rubik's cube of genocide. So we're not just talking about starvation and disease. We're not talking about, you know, destroying the hospitals and the infrastructure, the sewage, creating a situation where hepatitis becomes rife and then there are no medications, the polio virus, you know, the bad weather, the fact that the pipelines are all destroyed. If you look at everything that the Israelis have done and are doing, then it becomes this Rubik's Cube of genocide. It may not look the same every day, but it will still be a combination. And so, you know, even with this, am I going to call it a peace plan? No, it's a genocide plan that has been manufactured by the Israelis and the Americans, which they've also called, was it a board of peace? Oh, they're all such lovely words, aren't they? And a stabilization force to enable them to continue the genocide, but using these very lovely words. And it means that they can make the public relax. Oh, how do you feel now the war is over? I can't tell you how many times that has been said to me. And I've had to say, it's not over. The genocide never finished. It's continuing. It's going on. But it's just got nicer words around it so people think that it's finished. People, I mean, was it 29 people killed this morning? Dozens of children. And then 25 people killed yesterday. These are airstrikes. It's continuing to bomb Gaza. So I don't know where the ceasefire fits into that, because as far as I'm concerned, that isn't a ceasefire. They're not stopping anything. They're continuing with the ethnic cleansing by death, or even by trying to bus them out and then fly them into South Africa. I'm glad South Africa has now put a stop to it. May get some criticism for it, but the point is it didn't want to be a party to ethnic cleansing. And that's what we're all complicit with. If we don't speak out as journalists, if we don't speak out as reporters and activists, if we don't keep telling the world this, they actually do sit back as if they were just watching an episode of Coronation Street and think it's all over. And the thing is, it isn't. We're halfway through. The ethnic cleansing isn't complete, and they will continue until it is complete. I may have strayed off your question a little bit. It's because there's so much of it, and it's because I think the general public have been conned. They've been conned by words, and I'd like to think they're a little bit more intelligent than that. It's disappearing out of mainstream media, certainly, and people keep saying now the war is over all the time. And for a start off, it was never a war. It was a genocide. And now we have this Trump Netanyahu genocide plan, which is against the Geneva Conventions, which is against the Apartheid Conventions, it's against the Genocide Convention. And yeah, I kind of want people to wake up.
Well, let's turn now to those ongoing developments. So, of course, you're talking about the recent UN Security Council resolution, which is this Western imposed colonial trusteeship, or a mandate, if you will, that seeks to dissolve Palestinian governance in Gaza, hand temporary administration of the land well, they say temporary, but I think they mean permanent administration of the land. So the same powers that armed Israel's genocide to disarm the occupied people, or attempt to disarm them. I don't think they'll be very successful in doing that, while also throwing Palestinian statehood to the wind. I mean, what's your reading beyond what you've just said on what that signals about the future?
I think, isn't that what they always wanted? This was always the plan, you know, to dissolve Palestinian statehood, to prevent the Palestinians' right of return, which is an inalienable right, by the way, to, you know, not to have to pay reparation costs, to create a situation where Gaza is uninhabitable, to then, say, use voluntary migration, which is enforced migration, to get them out there, to continue killing, to find a way to continue the genocide but under a different form. Isn't that what they were always doing? I can't actually see the difference. This is exactly the same, but it's got some very pretty words around it. And now somebody's gone and voted. And I think the United Nations Security Council, oh my God, how spineless do they have to be? I don't know whether I was the only one praying for Russia and China to veto it, but no, it was worse than that. They abstained, which is like, we might have vetoed it, but we decided that we'd do a trade and stay and just stay quiet. I mean, it's even worse. So, you know, you're waiting for somebody to stand up and say, this can't go on. This plan is just about legitimizing genocide. It's about taking away accountability. And it's about allowing the Israelis to take Gaza over. Well, isn't that what they were always trying to do? Isn't that what they were doing when they were bombing it? And they are still bombing it. But isn't that what they did when they originally invaded it? Isn't that what has been happening for 77 years? I can't see how this plan is different from the illegal occupation. And as you rightly said, you know, occupations are supposed to be temporary. Here we have a permanent one. We have dozens of violations of international law just inside this. Oh, I'm going to keep calling it a peace plan, and I really don't want to. Just inside this Trump-Netanyahu genocide plan are multiple violations of not just the Geneva Convention, but, you know, international law itself, multiple violations. It is disabling the Palestinians, the right to self-governance. There's nothing in this plan which is aimed at giving the Palestinians what they've always wanted and always resisted for, which is self-determination, which is the chance to actually belong to their own land and own their own land and govern their own land in their own way. No matter who they vote for, you know, it's removing their ability to continue living there. Well, isn't that what they were doing in the first place? This is just a different side of the Rubik's Cube. And it's a clever one because, you know, there are people that think, oh, you know, Trump's a hero. You know, he's come along and he's going to make peace. He hasn't made peace. You know, if 29 Palestinian people are slaughtered in one morning and then the day before another 25 and 13 children the day before. I'm sorry, I'm not quite sure where that is peace. I'm not quite sure if you want to call that an incremental genocide because the numbers are smaller. Well, you know, eventually you will carry on and you'll have an entire genocide. Nothing has changed. I was even thinking about the Colombian peace plan when I read it. You know, everything was good until they said, you know, but of course, you know, we would like the Israelis to continue being able to have Jerusalem as their capital. Okay, so previous to that, they had stated that they had to withdraw back to the 1948 lines and, you know, they had to pull out and then no more settlements. And then they say, oh, but you can still have Jerusalem as your capital. So how in God's name do you do that when you've got to ethnically cleanse Jerusalem of the Palestinians? So in some ways, it completely contradicted the beginning of what they were trying to say. Theirs was the best plan. But at the end of the day, it's still once again an excuse to continue ethnically cleansing Palestine, central Palestine, Jerusalem. And then, oh, but we'll give you Abu Dhabi, we'll give you East Jerusalem as your capital. Which is actually a rubbish dump. Now, I don't mean to insult Abu Dhabi. There are people that live there, and it's their environment, and it's their home. but it's been turned into a rubbish dump. And so that's what's going to become the Palestinian capital when Jerusalem is their capital. I can't see how anything's changed. It's just been relabeled. That's my point of view anyway.
Well, I mean, people talk about the fact that the Nakba never ended, that it's an ongoing Nakba. And it seems to me, quite rightly, as you've pointed out, that it really nothing has changed. All that changes is the pace and also the framing around the genocide. But the genocide always continues. And of course, that was always the Zionist plan. Even if you look at the so-called Labour Zionists, who were the majority back then and sort of the considered the more moderate wing of Zionism, not that there is any such thing. But David Ben-Gurion and the Labour Zionists, who of course were the people who created the Haganah, which then became the Israel Occupation Forces, and which carried out numerous massacres alongside Zionist terrorist organizations during the Nakba, they were very clear right at the beginning that they would only accept a partitioned state so that they could eventually take over the rest of Palestine. And of course, that comes with, as I think Ben-Gurion said, brutal compulsion and also expulsion of the indigenous people, and not just their expulsion, but also their mass slaughter, of course, as we have seen. You made reference earlier to the Greater Israel Project, which is the Zionist expansionist plan to conquer all of historic Palestine, as well as to absorb parts of Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, Egypt, and beyond. In the West, for many years, this has often been treated as some sort of conspiracy theory. But the Zionists talk openly about it, and they talk more openly about it now than they ever have before. And we even saw Netanyahu recently visit some of the newly annexed land, or the newly occupied land, I should say, in Syria. How serious is this Greater Israel plan, and what effects could that have for the region in the coming months and years?
I do hate making predictions because they often come true, but I there was a time when it wasn't okay to talk about the Greater Israel Project. People did think you're right, that you were a conspiracy theorist, but it's absolutely true. And I wonder whether some of our arrests and our trials and our court cases have been perfectly timed around 2027, 2028, and the end of 2026, when you will see a much bigger expansion going on. And that could very likely, when you know when they said they were going to bomb Gaza back to the Stone Ages, well, we're looking at Lebanon could very easily end up in this situation. We've only seen a small taste of it at the moment, and the southern Lebanon is being bombed and people are being killed, and now they're attacking a Palestinian refugee camp. But you know, a lot of Lebanese people, as we know, have been slaughtered, and the pager incident. And, you know, I think what we're going to see over the next coming year and towards the end of the year is a real push. The Greater Israel Project is going to actually start to become a reality. And by then it'll be too late. You know, the Israelis have played the better chess game, and we're sitting around just moving pawns around the chessboard. But it's going to happen. And I think Lebanon is a target. I actually think Jordan is a very big target, but I get into trouble for saying it. But I also think Syria, you know, and obviously there's parts of Saudi Arabia that are very much involved in losing their land to the Greater Israel Project, and North Sinai, I think the two places. And if you look at the Greater Israel Project, that takes the Suez Canal as well. So, I know that the Egyptian people are very supportive of Palestine, so this is not against the Egyptian people, but Sisi is being very careless about one of his main sources of income, and that's not just the tourist industry over the pyramids, but the Suez Canal. Now, if you look at the Greater Israel Project map, that includes the Suez Canal, that includes parts of Saudi Arabia, that includes pretty much most of Lebanon. I don't know what is going to be left of Lebanon. And I think if the countries don't start rising up, and rising up very quickly, and you know, it's difficult when you've got America sort of pressing down on you. But, you know, if something isn't done very swiftly, I think that the same time that we are no longer able to post, we are no longer able to work as journalists and reporters. Don't forget that 250, Palestinian journalists have already been slaughtered. But we're also looking at the silencing of hundreds of very big people with very big platforms. That is when I think it will all happen. And this is a preparation. This taking us to court, accusing us of this, accusing us of that, trying to jail the people that have been on YouTube, like Richie Medhurst, you know, trying to jail Craig Murray, trying to jail myself, I suppose, trying to jail anybody who's been outspoken or anybody who's prepared to tell the truth tellers, then it's all going to happen at that time when we become silent. And this is, you know, I've got a sort of, I suppose I'm not very positive about all of these court cases because they do not want people exposing these plans. And how do we expose them? We expose them through social media. It's going to be difficult to stop people. There's a legal reason why they can't stop people using social media. The only way they can silence us is to jail us. And when we are all jailed, that is when you're going to see all of these things start happening, this mad push to start taking more and more territory in Syria, but Lebanon in particular, and Jordan. You know, I feel that Jordan is a holding platter. I mean, there's a lot of Palestinian refugees live there. But, you know, it is also a sovereign country whose king could be forced into exile. The Greater Israel Project is actually one of the most dangerous things that we have ahead of us. And in some ways, the British state is preparing a way. It's preparing a pathway so that it can do. It knows BBC isn't going to cover it. It knows that the mainstream news is not going to cover it. So it's got to silence all of the people that would cover it. And funnily enough, when you look at all of the names of the people who've been arrested, those are the ones who are most prolific on social media, on Twitter or other platforms, telling the world, wake up, this is happening. Now, they silence all of us. They're just going to quietly get along with it. And I think this is why the dates of the trials are done specifically, because these things are going to start happening by the end of 2026. I would be surprised if you don't see a lot more bombing in Palestine, maybe the destruction of Al-Aqsa Mosque, which I think will make a lot of people gasp. But I do think the collapse of Al-Aqsa Mosque is imminent if they continue their excavations. Maybe all this will happen by the end of 2026 when we've all been silenced and we're unable to report about it. Hopefully somebody will fill in. But at the moment, people are terrified. People are terrified to take over, if you like, posting 30 to 50 tweets per day. It actually takes up your whole day. It's a full-time job. There isn't really anybody else doing it. So all of those investigative journalists, we're all being silenced. And I think we're being silenced for a reason. And the Greater Israel Project is the reason. And it has begun already. I think Francesca Albanese said it's already begun, and I think she's right. But it hasn't begun on a big enough scale that it's noticeable. And so they're getting away with it. And so, yeah, I do fear the amount of arrests that are being made, because they are prolific reporters and activists, and they're the ones that we need to pass on to the next generation. That something big is going down, something bad is happening, and your government is facilitating it. Do something about it. Get out on the streets. There is no ceasefire. This is all a ruse to make you relax. And so, yeah, it's all internet. It's another part of the Rubik's Cube.
Well, with that, I'm afraid we're going to have to call our conversation to an end. I really appreciate the insights that you've been able to give, Sarah, and I want to express my support and solidarity with you. I want to wish you the very best of luck with your case. And I'd ask anyone who's listening to follow you and also your work if they aren't already doing so. Sarah, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you.
See you next time.
You can in the name of freedom. You can in the name of democracy. Is it not enough what you've done with all the bloodshed you've caused? Yet your greed drives you on. In your brutal race for acquisition, no land is left untouched, driven by a vile ambition to have the whole world in your clutch. Every single new addition to your slave colony does nothing to dull your ambition to leave no nation free. It is indeed a sad condition that you suffer from, this itching desire for prime position to have all under your feet. Not in my name will you fight. Not in my name will you kill. Not in my name will you burn a child. Not in my name will you love. Not in my name will you invade. Not in my name will you lie. I warn you, it's time to take heed. Against your evil methods of violence and intimidation, against your hijacking and misinterpretation of my peaceful faith and revelation, I shout with billions in this demonstration. Not in my name will you kill. Not in my name will you burn a child. Not in my name will you love. Not in my name will you invade. Not in my name will you rain. Not in my will you dare to speak again? Not in our name. Not in our name.
Good morning to all listeners from around the world. You are tuned into Iran Radio, broadcasting from Tehran. And I'm your host for the next hour. And here are some interesting facts about Islam. You are listening to Iran Radio. There are an estimated 1.8 billion Muslims in the world, which is about 1.5% of the world's population. Due to birth and conversion rates, Islam is considered to be the fastest growing religion in the world today. We start off this hour's programs with Kids Corner. The program is all about children and child's play, a fun program specially made for children. After that, we have Round the World with reporters. Reporters from around the world tell us what is happening in their corner of the world. Listen to fascinating reports from countries both near and afar. Let's recite the Quran will be our final program this hour. The program teaches eloquent recitation of the Holy Quran at level 2.
Assalamu alaikum.
Welcome, kids.
Hey, man.
Hey, girl.
Hello.
Hi.
My brothers, my sisters, and all of my gentle friends, this is a song that I have learned. Let's sing it.
Welcome
to
Kids Corner. And you know, you're not gonna go wrong when you're at Kids Corner.
We say assalamu alaikum, wa alaikum assalam.
Assalamu alaikum, dude.
Assalamu alaikum, wa alaikum assalam.
You're listening to Brother Ali at Kids Corner. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay?
Okay.
Are you guys with me?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Good job. Mashallah, you guys are doing it. Ah, good question. Good question. I'm about to answer that question.
He knows everything, past or future, and aware of every word or gesture. Whatever we do,
Kids Corner. A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin. Wassalatu wassalamu ala sayyidina Muhammadin wa alihi tayyibin at-tahirin.
Allahumma
salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajahu. Welcome, dear listeners.
Hello.
Hi.
Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.
You're listening to Brother Ali at Kids
Corner.
Yeehaw!
Welcome, everyone.
Assalamu alaikum. Assalamu alaikum. Wa alaikum assalam. Wa alaikum assalam. Come to the masjid, come to the masjid. Wash and pray, wash and pray. These are the things that will keep the devil away.
We were talking about sitting etiquette in the last few sessions, actually, huh? Okay, in the last session, I don't know if you guys remember, what did we talk about in the last session? Okay, how about this? I'll remind you. Imam Ali alayhi salam said, do not hasten to occupy the highest spot in the assembly, for a seat which you are promoted to is better than one you're demoted to. You guys understand the saying?
Yes.
Can you really quick explain?
It means that, for example, we go sit somewhere, and then the host of that gathering, he says, this is reserved for someone else, so please go sit there. So that seat, we were sitting in this
important place.
Important place. And then we're
demoted to.
Demoted to a normal place.
Uh-huh, very
so,
good.
So that place is
like this guy comes in, he goes, you know what, I'm a big guy. Yeah. I'm going to go and sit at that important place. He goes and sits there and the host says, excuse me, hello. Hello, can you hear me? Okay, can you move, please? Can you go to the other place? Huh? And this guy's like, oh, okay, and he goes to the ordinary place, right? Now he's getting demoted to, right? We talked about that. All right, Imam Hassan Askari alayhi salam said, the one who is satisfied with the place where he's sitting, but he deserves to be sitting at a better place than what? Do you remember?
Allah and the angels are blessing him the whole time.
All right, good job.
Way to go.
Allah, subhanahu wa ta'ala, and the angels are blessing this person. As long as he sits there. You know why? Because he deserves to be sitting at one better place. And he chose an ordinary place. Okay, now we're going to talk about with whom must we sit? We talked about gatherings. Now, there's a saying of Imam Ali alayhi salam. He says, sit with the poor. Sit with the poor and your gratefulness will increase. What does that mean, Imam Ali alayhi salam? He said this, sit with the poor and your gratefulness will increase. What does that mean?
It means that if we sit among the poor, we realize how much Allah has given us.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Woohoo! Good job, people.
This is so true. When we sit with the poor people, then we will be more grateful for all the blessings that Allah has given us. All right? The poor people live in a very simple life. They lead a very simple life. They eat very simple food. They cannot afford many luxuries. Correct? So when we sit with them, we will realize, oh my God, Allah has given us so much. Then we'll be more grateful. We'll be more thankful for all the blessings that Allah has given us. Okay? Like for example, you know, you sit with a poor person and you see the bread this person is eating, dry bread. Okay? And we have like meat and everything. He's dipping this bread, like for example, in water and having it. Just bread. You sit with this person, you realize, oh my God, I can't eat that. How is he eating? Huh? I eat like with bread kebabs or hamburgers, what have you, huh? And I do it like nothing, no big deal. But then this, when I look at this person, I realize, oh my God, all these blessings that Allah has given us. As an example, okay? Now, there's another saying of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi. He said, feign poverty and love the poor. Sit with them and help them and shun the companionship of the rich and be kind to them and covet not their wealth. Okay, what does that mean? The Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi is saying, pretend that you are poor and sit with them and love them. Pretend, feign poverty. Pretend that you're poor and sit with the poor people and love them. Don't, you know, shun them. Love them. And stay away from sitting in the company of the rich. Now, this does not mean that we should be mean to the rich people. That's what the Prophet is saying. Don't be mean to them. Rather, be kind to them. But do not desire their wealth. Don't desire their wealth. So, what do we learn from this hadith, my dear brothers and sisters? Huh? Brother Hashim and Sumayya, tell me. He says, pretend, sit with the poor, and love them, and help them, and stay away from sitting in the company of the rich. But be kind to the rich, but do not desire their wealth.
So it means that we should be happy with what we have, and we should sit with the poor so that we appreciate it more.
Right.